today on Doomed! QAnon, oh QAnon, where art thou, QAnon? Today on the show, we will be breaking down what has been going on with the QAnon movement. You know, that movement started in 2017 because Trump said something while he was talking to the media, and a good portion of his followers ran with it and somehow ended up believing that there was a cannibalistic group of Satanists who were trafficking children all across the globe while eating babies. And of course, they were all just happened to be made up of Donald Trump's political enemies. We haven't really been seeing much of them on the mainstream social media platforms. And on this episode, we will break down exactly what's going on because, let me tell you, QAnon is changing, but that doesn't mean it's going away. And joining me on this episode of Doomed with Matt Binder, who I will bring up right now on the program, so you can all see him on the feed if you're watching the live stream, is my good buddy, Jared Holt. Jared, thank you.
Hey, Matt.
Thank you so much for... Let me pull you up a little bit on the sound. You're a little bit low. There we go. That should be better. Thank you so much for joining me, Jared.
Oh, thanks for having me. I do have to stop and pause real quick because it does sound like you're disrespecting the hustle. It takes grit to be able to run the world, control multinational banks, orchestrate politics, and maintain such a vivid side hobby. It sounds to me like maybe you're just jealous, Matt, that you're not working hard enough to be able to participate in a satanic, child abuse cult while running a podcast.
It's true. I'm lazy. I mean, I should actually. I can't believe I failed to do this. I mean, you've been on the show so many times. I feel like people know who you are. But let me just give you the proper introduction so everyone could know all the things you do while also apparently, I'm assuming, believe in this this QAnon hustle, being that you're promoting it so much right now. This is Jared Holt, ladies and gentlemen, of the Atlantic City Council's Digital Forensic Research Lab and host of the Shitpost podcast. I mean, Jared's been on this show so many times, but I was just actually telling him before, it's been like 6 months, I think, maybe five, because I think you did come on in like early February when we did like the special, like, last minute episode the day Donald Trump got impeached for the second time. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that was a good one. But we haven't done a show together since then, I don't think. So it's good to be on. Doomed is a great show. It earns the me stamp of approval, and I'm definitely going to start calling the place I work the Atlantic City Council.
Did I call it Atlantic City Council? Did I really do that?
Yeah, but it sounds way cooler than the actual thing.
Dude, I am so tired. You have no idea. Thursdays are like a marathon for me because I do my normal job at Mashable where I'm a reporter. But I also do a segment, about an hour, some odd long segment, where I co-host with the Majority Report crew on the second half of the show. And then I prep for this show, and then I do this show. And this show sometimes goes 3 hours plus long. So, you know, Thursdays are a marathon for me. I'm sorry if I called your job the Atlantic City Council. But... also, I might also have cryptocurrency on the mind. I've been liking to gamble, buddy, and all those crypto guys have been on my case. I don't know if you've seen over the weekend. I was fighting with about 10,000 of them as they were literally pouring into my mentions to sell me on the crypto, the currency of the future, the money of the future.
I am very sure. Did you have a spicy opinion, like, something, you know, really scorching white hot, like, hey, guys, I don't know about this thing?
Oh, I probably, I think I called it a Ponzi scheme and a pyramid scheme and a scam, the whole thing, the whole crypto world. I knocked them for being all conservative reactionaries and techno-libertarians. And for the few leftists who were trying to sell me on it, I told them, I probably told them that they were just being, you know, because this is not what I had you on the show to talk about, but the usual conversation I have with leftists who promote crypto is, why do you think crypto is good as a leftist? I made a lot of money from it. Oh, okay. You sold me.
Well, I mean, in that case, it has been undeniably good for a leftist.
That's
or
true, right. Right.
Probably
right.
Several.
Right. Right. And I'm sure, honestly, it would not surprise me. Well, it actually would surprise me, because I'm assuming that the QAnon crowd probably would not. Well, maybe not. I don't know. I'd be interested to find out the Venn diagram of QAnon believers who also advocate for cryptocurrency. I really haven't seen it. Have you come across anything like that? I mean, it's
small, but it's out there.
Okay.
If you go looking for it, you can find it. And they got like a little irked whenever Trump went on, I think it was Fox Business News or something, the place for news about business. And said like Bitcoin was a scam and that the US dollar is fucking awesome or something. And like, they got a little irked about that.
You know who else has called the cryptocurrency a scam? Their Lord and Savior, former President Donald Trump. He literally just recently, he was on Fox Business and he said himself, he was like, I think it's a scam. And I mean, hell, you know, some of them were trying to spin it as, oh, look, if Donald Trump doesn't like it, then, you know, he doesn't want you to like, you know, you, if you hate Donald Trump, you should love Bitcoin then. And I mean, in my opinion, him not liking Bitcoin actually reinforces my view of it. I mean, because who would see through a grift better than one of the world's greatest grifters? I mean, a grifter's going to know a grift.
Yeah, when the scammer calls it a scam, trust it. Don't question it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
He has no, you know, horse in the race to, you know.
Right. If he did have a horse in the race, he'd be saying, let me tell you, I think Bitcoin is the currency of the future. Everyone's going to buy it. It's going to be great. But, you know. So, Jared, I did have you on this show, though, to talk about QAnon. And you recently wrote this piece. And from what I'm under, well, you co-wrote this piece with your colleagues. But basically, from what I understand, the gist of it from apparently some people who have read it and have their own interpretation of it is that ding dong, QAnon is dead. Let's wipe our hands clean. It's all done, Jared. Victory!
Yeah, no, that's not really. You know, I would point some of those people to the opening paragraph of the piece of the report. You know, the first two sentences of it, I would direct them to that. The report you're talking about, I, you know, did this data collection and reporting with my colleague Max Rizzuto, who's just totally brilliant and helped me navigate like all these different APIs and data sources like DDoS secrets, Gab leaks, Trove, some of the quote unquote hacked Parler data played into that. And what we did was we picked out some terminology, some phrases that are popular and, you know, kind of the telltale signs of QAnon as it has existed on the internet for the last, geez, I guess like 3+ years at this point. So, and especially around the time of, you know, this time last year when QAnon was experiencing this explosive growth. So, you know, after the election, you know, after Biden won the election, foiling the plan, and then more and more things kept happening that would seemingly disprove QAnon as if it is something that we have to be like, aha, as you see. Once you're there, you already lost, in my opinion. But like, anyway, so, you know, there's all this like thinking and wondering about like, well, what are these people gonna do? Because their prophecy failed. And, you know, there is sort of this notion, you know, there's also these claims of like, well, deplatforming totally works. They kicked QAnon off these platforms. We don't see it anymore. And then there was also sort of this dynamic of like these communities sort of changing how they talk to each other and what they think about. So we try to put the numbers together to the best of our ability to see, you know, how much of these notions or gut feels from researchers, reporters, et cetera, actually kind of matched what was happening. And we found, you know, we had something like 45 million data points in our set, which was kind of astonishing on its face that, you know, these QAnon phrases appeared on the internet. It was 13 phrases, I believe, appeared these 45 million times over the course of about a year and 4 months, which is already kind of mind-blowing. But, you know, what we saw, you know, kind of confirmed some of our hunches, but also really kind of called into question some things. And there were definitely some parts that we exited the other side of this data gathering surprised by.
Right, right. And, you know, I think actually I reached out to you right before this piece came out for a piece that I was writing that sort of, I think that they sort of go hand in hand with what you discovered and what I wrote about in terms of like QAnon believers who you found out in your study, you know, the deplatforming has worked and at least muzzled their hashtags and slogans and their ability to spread their, you know, the telltale signs of a QAnon believer on the major platforms. But they've sort of gone, as I put it in my piece, undercover. They are going to not only different platforms, but they're also finding ways to exist on the mainstream platforms just without the overt QAnon signals, I guess you can say.
Yeah, exactly. You know, what we found, and, you know, you can check it out on DFR Labs blog, where we posted or read one of the write-ups that was done about it.
There's a link in the YouTube description of this very live stream.
Yeah, so if you look at these graphs, you see like a QAnon that, as it sort of traditionally resembled itself, really roaring to life in the summer of 2020. And then as, you know, the election grew nearer and tech platforms started taking action, started to kind of dwindle, started to kind of fade. After the election, it starts to fade. And then after the attack on the Capitol, whenever these different tech platforms are like, all right, enough of this. We've got literally blood on our hands right now, so we're just going to like finally finish the job and just not limit this post, not like, you know, hide these posts from the algorithm, but just start banning people. Then it just sort of flatlines after that. And tech moderation is certainly like one part of the story. I would say, you know, that the correlation, and correlation is not causation, but like the correlation and relationship between these platforming efforts and the decline was sort of the strongest that we identified, rather, you know, versus any sort of specific historical event or message from Q. But there are certainly plenty of other factors in play. You know, in response to these deplatforming policies, you know, even if they are banned or not, it does create a behavior within the QAnon community to seek out alternative platforms or do like you reported on, which is fine. You know, try to come up with creative ways to stay on the big platforms, but maybe not mention, you know, the exact kind of things that we were looking for in our data grab, which I'm sure is also what these platforms were looking for, to detect some of this content. So, you know, there's a whole like mix of factors in the bunch, but I think ultimately it points towards a QAnon that is both voluntarily and involuntarily changing. Part of what bound it together so strong was a common language. You know, QAnon's like an umbrella for all these different conspiratorial beliefs, whether it's aliens, new age medicine, the pedophile stuff, Hollywood stuff, etc. But they all had kind of a common language to talk to one another. And that common language has been forced to change, and some parts have sort of flown out the window altogether.
Right. Now I'm looking at the at some of the data that you have here in this piece. And some of the terms you tracked, and I just want to make sure I'm reading this correctly. That's what these are, like the list here, the chart shows, you know, where we go one, when we go, excuse me, where we go when we go all, the storm, Great Awakening, Trust the Plan, Pizzagate, Save the Children. There's and my favorite is there's Q and there's Anons. I love that one. They're so
good,
so clever.
Yeah, that's for those who aren't familiar. That is the smoking gun from Q followers. The big fake news, like me and Matt don't know what we're talking about, which is there is no Q Anon. There is Q, and then there are the Anons that follow it, and that's supposed to be like the gotcha. But that, for a while, that was like their go, you know, these communities like go to response to like every new article about QAnon stuff that would drop.
Right. They pretended it just didn't, QAnon didn't exist. How could the media be reporting on something that doesn't exist? I'm just an Anon. There's Q, who hasn't posted since December. But that's not nothing to do with I don't know who that is, you know? I mean, right. it's just so – the funny thing is I forgot who posted it, but I saw someone posted some screenshots from one of the big QAnon forums. I think it was the Great Awakening, where basically there was an internal argument like on the board among QAnon believers where some people were saying QAnon and other people were getting mad at them, which isn't new. That happens. But something different that I saw that usually don't see is that there were people fighting back saying, I'm getting really tired of this. Like, how are we going to pretend there isn't a QAnon? I mean, and it's like, wow, some of them are getting a little bit edgy about this, a little bit ruffling their feathers.
Yeah. The QAnon community has... I mean, I guess not unlike any other online community, has its own share of like infighting and drama. The influencers fight with each other, one, for dominance, two, because everybody turns to look when there's a fight, you know, so it's an attention thing. But yeah, it got a little prickly there for a little bit.
Right. Now, if what do you think was the most important thing that happened? The tech policy or decision from any of these tech platforms that hit QAnon the most in terms of their usual slogans and signals to say that I'm here and I'm QAnon. You know, what would you say was the decision from what company, and what was the decision that like sort of probably was there hurt the movement the most in terms of getting that stuff out there on that particular platform?
So I think there's actually kind of two. Well, I mean, I think if we look at the big three players, Twitter, Facebook, and Google, in terms of influence on the broader tech sphere, them, all three of those companies taking actions affects the community in different ways. So Facebook did some post limiting, I believe, but the most potent thing that they did was disband a lot of these Facebook groups that had QAnon content in them, because that was a huge organizing hub. You know, you could drop a video in one of these Facebook groups, and QAnon believers believing it is their solemn duty to post like hell and spread the message of Q far and wide.
Digital soldiers, baby. Digital soldiers.
Could sometimes send shit viral, like almost on their own. Like that Plandemic video, a big reason that went viral is like QAnon Facebook groups or communities more broadly. YouTube was like the main video hub for them a while. So YouTube changing their content on conspiratorial policy or conspiratorial content to try to catch up more QAnon accounts in that mix, actually ended up being implemented fairly thoroughly. Of course, I mean, like with any of these sites, you can, if you look hard enough, you can find stuff that's flying through the cracks. But generally speaking, the major players, most of them got chopped down. But out of everything, it does seem that, you know, from the data we were counting, which was new posts containing these phrases, Twitter was really like what ended up like blowing down dimensions of these phrases the most. And that could be a variety of factors. Maybe just one that like people fight a lot more on Twitter or like are, you know, encouraged to cross pollinate a lot on Twitter with retweets and stuff like that. You know, Facebook has shares and stuff like that, but it's less ingrained into the, like the vibe of Facebook. I don't know if that makes any sense, but, you know, the platform of Twitter is like much more built around sharing and stuff. And also that's like where a lot of nodes of influence are. That's where Trump's Twitter account was. That is where, you know, politicians, reporters, researchers, are all on Twitter. So they go there and, you know, get in fights with them or scream at them or, you know, try to use that tool to their advantage. So, you know, the big three, all of those policies and actions against QAnon ended up dealing fairly devastating effects, at least to like Gen 1 of QAnon or like how we used to think of QAnon. But as far as impact goes, as far as the data in our studies concerned, I do think Twitter's actions ended up being the most consequential.
Right, right. Yeah, I could see in terms of, you know, the where the media and the politicians are, for sure. I think Facebook probably had a bigger impact on, like, rank-and-file QAnon believers in terms of, like, you know, your mom and dad or grandma, grandpa, aunts, uncles, brothers, sisters, whatever, you know, old high school or college buddies who got dragged into this. Facebook shutting that down probably had a really big effect on that. On how much they spread and continued to spread.
Yeah, I don't know how many people get like pilled off of single tweets or whatever, but like a Facebook group is a very potent thing and that is just like reinforcing itself all the time. And like going into one of those groups definitely was a way that a lot of people wound up radicalized very quickly.
Right, right. Now, I want to bring up this piece that, I mean, I don't, it seems like she must have read your piece and was one of those people who misinterpreted it. I don't know how you do, being that it's pretty clear.
I'm pretty sure I already know what you're talking about.
This Virginia Heffernan piece that really went viral. It went viral. Like, she really got the reports of QAnon's death aren't exaggerated. And some of the things she says is she, you know, brings up how its leader, Q, a figure from the internet's dark side, hasn't posted for months. Q's been silent for 7 months. And she also goes on to say many QAnoners, she calls them, are now behind bars, talking about January 6th. I don't know how many people she thinks, either she thinks an incredibly small amount of people are into QAnon, or she thinks there are a shit ton of people currently in prison who believe in QAnon.
Well, it's the shaman, dude. All the energy was collected in the Q shaman. And when he got thrown behind bars and denied like whatever weird fucking diet he demanded, it was over. That was it.
Right, right.
No, this column like really frustrated me because I feel like the columnist Virginia gets, if you go into like the body of the piece and read sort of what wound up on the page and like in the LA Times, she gets like kind of close to what's actually going on. Her Twitter thread is a completely different story and just like absolute you know, BS, unfortunately, but, you know, making all the wrong conclusions, jumping to all the wrong assumptions. But what she actually wrote, it's like, it's almost there. It's like, I'm trying to think of something to compare it to. It's like if you're at a basketball game and like the clock is ticking and the star basketball player just chucks the ball in the air from the half court, the buzzer rings, the ball is going in slow motion Oh my God, it could make it. It could go in. Are you kidding? It could win the game. And then it just hits the rim and like flies out and hits your grandma in the head and gives her a concussion. Like, that's what reading the column felt like to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's bizarre because, I mean, and now I guess we can get into this. Let's get into this part of it. So basically, QAnon is clearly changing. Like you wrote in your piece, they've had to change up how they speak on a lot of these platforms. Because, again, I think we should stress here that your piece basically looks at these slogans and code words and these things that usually signaled, hey, I'm QAnon. Those are the things that have dwindled on social media. But that doesn't translate to those people not being there, technically. Like,
right.
Just because they're not saying that stuff anymore. Like, obviously, there was a great purging that happened via Twitter and Facebook and YouTube, not so much. There were some influencers and bigger accounts. The groups were banned, but the actual people on those platforms, on Facebook, weren't. And when it came to YouTube, like, you had to be overtly sharing violent conspiracy theories to be banned. Because if you go on YouTube, where we are streaming right now, there are actually a number of QAnon shows still streaming on the YouTube platform. But on Twitter, there surely was a purge of accounts that basically strictly platformed QAnon stuff, like QAnon conspiracy theories, QAnon beliefs and links, etc. But, you know, just because someone has an account banned doesn't necessarily mean they go to, oh, I can never use Twitter again. Woe is me. They'll just start a new account, especially if it's not like, you know, if you're not someone who is going by your real name and is building like a brand based on your career or whatever. Like, if you are already like Anon123, why wouldn't you just create a new account, Anon1234?
Yeah, you know, and I think the sort of the simplest way to think about what our data shows is that it represents, so like the data represents a few things. One, you know, deplatforming and even just threats of deplatforming have moved some of these communities off of mainstream platforms. Telegram is a huge one. We could not obtain a very comprehensive data set for it, so we ended up just skipping it because any of our results would have been subject to just like what we're actually aware of. And if we just happen to forget, like, or just happen to be unaware of like a Telegram channel with 100,000 people in it blasting QAnon stuff all day, then the data is not good, right? So we ended up just sort of passing over it, which was such a huge bummer. We tried to figure out ways to not have to do that, but we had to, because Telegram is huge for QAnon. They love Telegram, love Telegram. So like some of it has moved over to alternative platforms. It's also, these moderation policies also, you know, kind of changed way that they talk to each other or how comfortable people are just posting like straight Q, if you will. But yeah, the simplest way to think about this is like that QAnon is changing. We are now in like Biden era QAnon, whereas like when Trump was in office, they were like, hell yeah, baby, it's the plan. Look at Trump. He made a Q with his finger. We got this. Nothing to be scared of, boys. You get banned, don't worry. After the election, Trump's restoring your account. And like, that's an exaggeration, but not so much
of one. I'm
pretty
sure I've seen some similar, if not exactly that, very similar. Yeah.
But yeah, but now it's like, it's harder and harder to make the case that like things are going to plan. And after the election, Q just like abandoned everybody. And this is a community that is kind of entering its next phase. But through these alternative platforms and to the degree that they exist in mainstream platforms and to the degree that it exists as a worldview and an ideology that experienced a surge in popularity in the last year, it's still very much with us. And, you know, to look at, it's so unfortunate. I wish Virginia would have just called me like reporters do to ask about, you know, make sure that what they think our data shows is, you know, what we're actually trying to, you know, what we think it shows as the people who collected it. You know, unfortunately, that is the wrong conclusion to be like, oh, chart go down, QAnon dead. Like,
right.
It's really not that simple. I think the data is useful to look at, but even then, it's, you know, it's numbers on a graph, and there are like other contexts and other pieces of the story that are relevant when we think about this.
Right. I mean, I think the idea that, you know, Q not posting anymore matters also shows, you know, that you should have asked somebody, because it's been quite clear that Q not posting anymore has not really affected QAnon at all, if any. I mean, you know, I'm sure they wish he did, and there was some sort of next step, but they've surely been able to use the old Q drops and repurpose them and try to find out what's in there and what's being said for that could relate to current times, current day. But also, I mean, like you mentioned earlier, a lot of the QAnon influencers who are infighting, they're infighting for good reason, and that's because they're sort of taking over that empty space that Q has left. And I think this is where, and this is the next thing I want to talk about, because I think, you know, the title I put for the stream was QAnon is changing, you know, but it isn't, what exactly did I put? QAnon is changing, but it isn't going away. And I think, you know, what we're seeing now is this transformation of QAnon. And I mean, it's sort of perfect just to describe it, I think, what we're at right now. To borrow a quote from Trump, I think right now we are in the calm before the storm, Jared. I think QAnon is currently changing in a way that will set forward the next stage of QAnon. And that stage is going to be, I think, a lot more dangerous. We've seen there was a recent, and you can toss this aside, whoever you want, because it was a U.S. intelligence warning that basically said, it just came out like a day or two ago, where they said they fear that QAnon believers are going to start becoming more radicalized and more violent as they realize that none of the prophecies that they hope will bring Trump back into office come true. And again, you can be skeptical of what U.S. intelligence is saying there, and I totally agree with you. But I can tell you from what I have seen, U.S. intelligence doesn't have any sort of, you know, they probably do have some sort of insider information, but they're also probably looking at some of the same channels that Jared and I look at and are getting this from there. And I think the perfect example of that, and I was, this was what I was talking about earlier today when I was on the Majority Report and giving people a bit of a teaser of what we were going to talk about on this episode of the show. I brought up that specific Telegram channel, Ghost Ezra.
Oh, dude. Marc-André, I always mess up his last name, just had this like great write-up of Ghost Ezra. Definitely worth checking it out. I'm going to try to pronounce his name. I don't know why I always struggle with it. I love his work.
I know who you're talking about, but yes, I'm not sure. He's like French.
Marc-André,
right?
Argentino. Oh. I don't know why I can't remember that.
I thought he had some like French Canadian last name, and that's why it was hard. But
I think it's the accent.
Oh, there's an accent there. There you go.
Or the like two first names thing. Maybe that's what's giving me a hold up. But,
right.
But yeah.
Now, are you familiar with this channel, Jared? I'm sure you've come across it at the very least.
Yeah, man, it's hard not to be. Just because it is, you know, as Marc-André writes in his piece, you know, quite well, It's like the perfect example of a major QAnon channel, like, looking around, trying to fill the void in the absence of the Q stuff, and then, like, turning to more extreme content, specifically, like, more explicit fantasies of violence or, you know, explicitly bigoted content or white supremacist content.
Right. And I think also how that channel blew up and when it blew up, or that influencer, I should say, blew up, is super important in the face of people who think QAnon is dying. There are QAnon influencers who've been out there since the very early days, like the late 2017, you know, November, December 2017, when QAnon was still on 4chan before they moved over to 8kun.
And people on 4chan, like, mostly hated Q.
Right.
They're like, get the fuck out of here. What the fuck? You dumb boomer piece of shit. Get off of this board.
Right. And there are influencers who came in throughout the years as time went on. And then you even had some of, like, the latecomers who were obviously always sort of flirting with it, at least for the past year, like, you know, Sidney Powell. And what's his face? Oh, my God, I'm having a mental block right now.
Mike Flynn, baby.
Oh, Mike Flynn. How could I forget Mike Flynn? He's not even who I'm talking about.
The General.
Right.
Lynn Wood,
thank you. That's who I was having a mental block for. Right. So these are all, you know, well, Michael Flynn's been there for a while on the Q train. I love that his family's suing CNN as they continue to do, like, the QAnon oath every chance they get. For those who don't know, CNN did, like, a story about how Michael Flynn's family are QAnon believers, and they used footage of them, like, doing this QAnon oath, which apparently Michael Flynn also did in Dallas a few weeks ago.
Mike Flynn also picked up, like, a Q quilt and was helping auction off this, like, QAnon branded quilt, which is, like, I think Steve Monticelli, he was on your show too.
He was
right?
on my show too, yes.
He made the rounds, dude. He's a great guest.
He was one of the few people who were there and didn't get kicked out. I mean, getting kicked out would also be something to be proud of, but to have successfully infiltrated the entirety of the weekend's events, that's also something to be quite proud of. So, you know.
I'm just, like, trying to close my eyes and, like, picture in my head the person who spends $15,000 on a quilt designed with QAnon stuff. Because you know they're taking that back to, like, a McMansion. If you have 15 grand, it's just, like, blow on a quilt. It's like, I just can't.
They're definitely of boomer age.
That's somebody. No, but I'm saying, like, that's somebody's boss, or, like probably many people's boss.
Possibly.
And it's like, hey, boss, what'd you do this weekend? And it's like, you got to come back here. I got to show you my quilt, but you got to promise not to tell the FBI.
Yeah, but it could be a retiree, though. Who knows, you know? But anyway, you know, Ghost Ezra, though, complete. Now, we don't know who Ghost Ezra is. This isn't someone who's, you know, you got your Jordan. Oh, my God. I can't believe I'm forgetting his last name right now.
Sather.
Thank you. Jordan Sather. And, you know, you had a number of other people who I just mentioned. And you got, you know, Patriot Soapbox guy. Like, the people who were always, like, out there on, you know, they put their face out there. We don't know who Ghost Ezra is. We don't know if it's a guy or if it's multiple people. We don't know. It's an anonymous account. But Ghost Ezra set up a Twitter account after the 2020 election. This is someone who came into QAnon where I think it was even in December they set this up. This is someone who came into QAnon after Q stopped posting. And this person is now the largest QAnon influencer on Telegram. I actually think if you probably do the numbers, they're probably the largest QAnon influencer, period. We're talking about a Telegram channel with 330,000 people and growing. I don't know any, like, that's, if you had 330,000 people following you on, like, a mainstream platform that like the media was aware of, they'd be calling you, they'd be tracking every single move of this. Like, has there been any?
Yeah, you'd have blogs like just write up your tweets for content. Like, right. I could tweet like, "Damn, sure, it's taken a long time to board my flight," and like a place like Mediaite would be like, "Jared Holt roast American Airlines for slow boarding process." Like, that's what that kind of level of following on a mainstream platform can do.
Right. I mean, 330,000 plus people follow this Telegram channel. And like you said, this isn't someone who's just promoting QAnon stuff now. This is an influencer who is falling deeper and deeper into anti-Semitic, Holocaust denialism, neo-Nazi rhetoric. Now, yes, there always was hints to that in various QAnon conspiracy theories, you know, blood libel. A lot of that was in there. Sure. But mask off now. And, you know, even if you weren't, like, before, like, even, like, those hints of anti-Semitism, I'm sure there were a lot of QAnon believers who actually didn't pick up on it because, you know, you're just following whatever you hear, and you don't even realize this stuff if it's not so in your face. But this,
it was the type of anti-Semitism where it's like, I'm gonna make a list of 10 influential people that are evil satanic pedophiles. And notice their last names, and like it's that kind of anti-Semitism. Right. And then like Ghost Ezra is just like, Jews control the world. Like that, it's a jump, right? It's a little bit less, like the plausible deniability starts to lift away there at that point.
Right, and I this is what they the far right was hoping for with QAnon, wasn't it? Like, I really am. Like, I think that Ghost Ezra account, when if it's ever uncovered who's behind that, I think it's going to be hugely insightful to what the hell is going on here, because we were hearing for as long, well before January 6th, well before Trump lost the election, there was always the far right talking about, oh man, when we red pill these QAnon people who are, maybe some of them are just in it for the anti-vaxxer stuff. Maybe some of them are in it because they're just old boomer normies who really love Donald Trump because they like a businessman who's in charge. Like, you know, obviously that all brings you towards, you know, right-wing ideology and authoritarianism, but it isn't overt, and you're not falling down the rabbit hole quite yet in terms of being a full-on, you know, neo-Nazi, white supremacist, anti-Semite. But they knew that this was all softening these people up to take that red pill and then drag them down the rabbit hole for good. And like, Ghost Ezra is a example of that dream becoming reality for them in mass. 300,000 fucking people. I really can't get over. Like, to give people an example, I might even be what's his name? The researcher you just cited,
Mark Andre.
It might have been him who I read this from too in a tweet. The next, like, when we talk about hardcore neo-Nazi Telegram channels, the largest of those channels are probably about like in the low tens of thousands. We are
like the hardcore neo-Nazi stuff.
Yeah, like they don't grow.
Yeah, that's about right.
Like the ones like the neo-Nazi
the ones that like pop off have like 30.
Right. Low tens of thousands. Yeah, 10,000, 20,000, 30,000. But we're talking about a channel that's spreading exactly that stuff with at 10 times that at the least. It's like, I don't think we've seen something so big in that world in terms of the number of people following this.
Well, I mean, we could go back to like 2014, right? The old timers in the chat and listening at home will remember the like early days of the alt-right. And so much of the conversation then, or I say alt-right, what we called the alt-right at that time, Alt-right was just a euphemism for a new generation of white nationalists. But anyway, at the time, there was all this conversation, specifically from these activists, about performing an action that is dubbed moving the Overton window. And it's been discussed ad nauseum at this point. I am kind of like my, even when I say it, my eyes kind of roll into the back of my head. Cause I've just heard the phrase so much, or like heard the phrase applied to like everything. It's almost becoming cliche, but this is like definitionally a really good example of that, because by getting people engrossed in QAnon, you are getting them either adopting very kind of outlandish conspiratorial worldviews. You're getting them developing these sort of very visceral and emotional rejections of societal norms or authoritative sources of information. And, you know, at the very least, you're getting people together in these communities where that is happening, and at minimum, like desensitizing that to them. So along comes Mr. You know, how, you know, it's impossible to say how many people died in the Holocaust, etc. Like, when you're already like in the fun house, like when you turn the corner and see like the next crazy thing, it's not as shocking as before. And, you know, it's the way we understand like right-wing extremist groups, they are, you know, constantly churning through members and stuff. So they're always looking for that next chance to recruitment. And there were some very explicit discussions like a year or two ago about trying to turn all these Q people who are like terminally addicted to the internet and like very active and attentive in politics, even if they are completely off base, and trying to get them turned on to some of the more, you know, nefarious or dangerous beliefs that extremist movements hold.
Right, right. And you know, someone in the chat, we're going to take some questions. So if you want to drop some questions, I'll try to get to as many as I can. It's hard to see some of them sometimes. But if you want to be sure, I will promise I'll get to your question if you drop it as a super chat, because then it'll be highlighted and I'll come across it for sure. But we got a super chat from James, who asks, odds that Ghost Ezra is just the Watkins or Jerome Corsi taking back the meme? I mean, I don't know. I mean, obviously we could speculate about anyone being Ghost Ezra because we don't know. But I mean, this account is so big, I would be shocked if someone who already was big was able to like strike gold twice without using their stature that they've already built up to help build it up. Like, it's it could possibly be anybody, quite honestly. I don't think it's Jerome Corsi. That one I'm not sure about. But the Watkins, I mean, it could possibly be. I don't know. This one is, I might even, I don't know. This has turned, this channel has turned so, and I'm sure he's would have some of these beliefs, but I don't know. It's so open about it. I wouldn't be surprised if this channel is run by just honestly someone who already has been out there as an out-and-out neo-Nazi or something like that.
Yeah, it's I don't want to like speculate too much.
Yeah.
I will say my gut is telling me no on the Watkins. And it's definitely telling me no on Jerome Corsi, because Jerome Corsi has been renting out his newsletter to this super scammy like cryptocurrency investment firm. So that's like what he's doing right now. And like sometimes I talk about crypto stuff with Mike Hayden from SPLC, and we've agreed that the scammers in cryptocurrency are like the only people that we respect.
I honestly, I think I have to start a cryptocurrency podcast or something, like, because I have gone totally full on into that world in terms of criticizing it all. I'm working on something right now that on cryptocurrency that's honestly blowing my mind in terms of like
how some of the shit gets out there. I can't talk about it too much though, because it hasn't been published yet. But I will definitely share it when it is up. Let's see if any other questions. Sardini asks, can you both comment on the New Age crossover, especially regarding UFO disclosure by U.S. military intelligence? Note that Ron Watkins is now doing alien leaks. Well, personally, I think it's just a way for them to get more conspiratorial normies into it. Like, alien, like UFOs and aliens are probably like the most like non-dangerous of the conspiracies. Like, you could put it up there with like Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster. Like, these aren't necessarily conspiracy theories that, like, if someone believes them, there'll be someone to be worried about. Like, you can, you know, if you know someone who believes in Bigfoot, they're probably, you know, maybe weird in some aspects, but probably normal all around. They don't think Donald Trump is really going to ascend to the presidency once again in August. And I think this is probably their play to try to get more people. I mean, especially being that so much stuff has been coming out where, like, obviously it's becoming clear that UFOs and aliens probably do in some respect exist because of those videos. Although I believe that even, like, people in that world have explained those videos in terms of what they are in reality. Like, they're not, they're unidentified flying objects do not mean alien aircraft. They literally just could be unidentified objects from this world. So I think that's the play. What do you think, Jared?
So it depends on the Q community that you go into. It's either just like, I would say some of the softer QAnon communities, the ones that really don't have much fangs on them, are definitely like kind of curious or whatever. I mean, it is like one of the oldest conspiracy theories out there is like what's going on in Area 51. And most people, like you said, don't get worked up about the alien stuff so much that they start like building militia compounds out in the woods and training for like an eventual war between aliens and humans. So like on the scale, it's again pretty soft. But if you talk to some QAnon followers, that's just exactly what the national intelligence apparatus wants. The CIA is releasing UFO stuff because those are safe conspiracy theories, and they want to take all the attention off how true QAnon is. And the election audit in Arizona, ooh, that's wrapping up soon. What a great time to put UFO stuff out. Get all the attention there. That way people won't realize that an election was stolen and Trump will rightfully reascend to the throne later this year. Trust the plan. Hold on tight. Like, that's there's kind of like two scripts and then like a little bit of gray area in between.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's there are multiple reasons to go after the UFO people, that's for sure. This is not obviously the point of this conversation, but obviously, I mean, it seems like the most plausible of all the conspiracy theories, the idea that we would be so pompous to believe we're the only living things out there is but that is what we do. Msetti asks with a super chat.
SMDH, Matt Bender, believing CIA propaganda again.
Msetti says via super chat, there's an alien connection that's worrying, but it's a little more complex to get into. Oh, can fill you in later if you want. Oh, okay. I guess you'll have to let me know later.
Yeah, it's a cliffhanger.
Yeah, there we go. So, Jared, Neo Ripshaft says, yep, Jared, spot on. I've heard QAnoners who are ardent believers in aliens say pretty much exactly that. Right, right. I mean, I guess we could also bring into this the idea that the recent push that January 6th was all a plot by the FBI. This is something that has been pushed via various right-wing media outlets, and I guess I should play this.
And some figures, like pretty prominent writers, I'm going to do the thing where I switch the first letter of the first name and the first letter of the last name. That way it's not totally clear who I'm talking about. Glenn Greenwald.
I mean, let's.
I don't want to dive into him because I'll just get upset. But like, right. just completely bummed.
Right.
But like,
let's get.
But it's like between like him and like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz. It's like it went from like, because there was one guy who was like kind of sort of, but not even really like Antifa at the Capitol riot who got arrested. You know, then it was like the riot was an Antifa thing. And now it was like an FBI thing because people don't understand how charging documents work, and think that like unnamed sources in a charging document is like a substitute for secret agent, which sometimes it is, but usually it's not.
Right, right. I mean, listen, obviously the FBI has a history of, especially when it comes to Muslim people and when it comes to like environmentalists and animal rights groups, leftist organizations, of infiltrating and pushing troubled people into doing things that they normally wouldn't do. If they didn't have those means that the FBI provides when trying to sort of entrap them. So I understand that in terms of being skeptical about these things. But I mean, well, number one, here's this. We do know that there was FBI involvement somewhat with January 6th, because we know that members of the 3%ers and Proud Boys have offered themselves up as FBI informants. I mean, they don't want to spend any time on that. Now, these are people who are fully involved and believe in everything here, and they're just out trying to save themselves from trouble by riding on their buddies. And I mean, so yeah, we do know in terms of informants that there was involvement there, but that doesn't necessarily in any way, shape, or form mean that the FBI was involved in the planning of the event. If anything, what we know signifies that they were probably able to find everybody rather easily because there were people who were there informing the FBI, yeah, that was so-and-so. He lives here, here, and here. I know his contacts. Here's his information. There you go. I mean, we know that these groups had people. I mean, the leader of the Proud Boys, Enrique, what's his face? I'm having another mental block right now.
Tario.
Thank you. He has been an FBI informant himself.
Yeah, I mean, as tough as these guys talk, as soon as like they wind up in the, you know, metaphorical interview room sitting across the table from a couple agents, most of these guys flip like, you know, any other scared person would. And something that this claim like completely misses is that it's pretty standard practice in indictments where if there is a subject in the indictment. So like if you see like an unnamed source or a confidential source, that can mean a few different things. It can mean a agent of that agency. So like it is possible that that is like an FBI agent. It could be an FBI informant, which is different because they may receive some sort of compensation, but they're not a government worker. They are maybe a member of a group that is providing information in exchange for money or in exchange for not being prosecuted on their own. It could also just be somebody that they are actively like crafting a case against, but haven't charged, because they don't typically like if they're getting information from an investigation of one case and using it in another, which we've seen them do over and over again in these charging documents, you know, like using cases to inform other cases. If that person hasn't been charged with a crime yet, they'll usually leave their name out for the time being and then sort of if those charges do get to the point where they're ready to file them, then they'll kind of retroactively go back and, you know, in documents as the case goes further, as the evidence goes further, we'll then start putting the name in there. Because otherwise it could be like a tip off or, you know, there's like a flight risk involved. So, you know, I am personally of the belief that if the FBI was involved with orchestrating the attack on the Capitol, I want to hear all about it, because that sounds like some like James Bond, like, or like House of Cards type shit. Right. But you're going to have to do like way fucking better on proof than this.
Right. You know what we could do, Jared? I mean, obviously, if the FBI is involved with the organizing of the storming of the Capitol on January 6th, what would be a really great way to find out more information would to be to have a commission.
Preferably bipartisan with full subpoena power.
Right. And I feel like we were so close to having one of those, but what I can't remember what happened, Jared. Do you remember?
Yeah, it like came down to, I think it was a vote, and the Republicans said no.
What? No, you gotta be kidding me. I don't believe that one. I think you got your wires crossed. I mean, obviously, if the FBI was involved in January 6th, and that would completely change who is viewed by the majority of the American people as the perpetrators, those at fault for January 6th. That would completely change what everybody knows and believes about January 6th. And so I assume that if you were the ones being blamed, i.e. if you were the Republican Party or Republicans or Trump supporters, you would want to get to the bottom of the FBI's involvement, and thus you would support the commission. I think you're misremembering, Jared.
Well, it's, you know, like one would think that you would want to aggressively pursue at the level and fury of Benghazi any exculpatory evidence that, you know, corrects this notion that you may have been either tacitly or specifically complicit in a attempt at insurrection. But, you know, it's just kind of like faux pas. It's not trendy. It's not cool. Commissions are boring. And, you know, Republicans have to get to doing like way radder stuff, like making sure there's no chance in hell that we even think about Juneteenth, something that they have supported over and over again in years past.
Oh, right. I got plenty
decided this year was like actually anti-white racism or something.
Right. So I wanted to play that Tucker Carlson clip, but you can't hear the sound. So maybe I'll hold off on that. You know what? Fuck, screw it. Have you seen the Tucker Carlson clip, right?
I think
of him on his claims that the FBI were involved with January. Yeah, let me play that really quick, and then we'll quickly talk about. I want to bring these screenshots up on the screen. Let me play this Tucker Carlson clip first, because we were talking about it, but I think people should see this. So you won't hear it, Jared, but I'll stop where it's relevant, and we'll discuss after I get you up to speed. Here's Tucker Carlson on his Fox News program a day or two ago after he read the report from the right-wing outlet Revolver News, saying that the FBI was involved in January 6th.
Actually, every single case, they were FBI operatives, really, in the Capitol on January 6th. For example, one of those unindicted co-conspirators is someone government documents identify only as Person 2. According to those documents, Person 2 stayed in the same hotel room as a man called Thomas Caldwell, an insurrectionist, a man alleged to be a member of the group the Oath Keepers. Person 2 also, quote, stormed the barricades at the Capitol on January 6th alongside Thomas Caldwell. The government's indictments further indicate that Caldwell, who, by the way, is a 65-year-old man,
I love how Carlson brings up that Caldwell, who is one of the people who is being charged, who it's his case that he's bringing up, who has the unindicted co-conspirator. he brings up how he's 65 years old, and he really stresses it, as if a 65-year-old man could never break the law. I mean, so bizarre. But let's continue. Also, he seems to believe that that the co-conspirator automatically means FBI agent, which we've already discussed is not the case.
It could be the case.
Right.
But there is also several other options that it could be, and it's completely irresponsible, especially with a platform like Tucker Carlson has, to so aggressively jump to that conclusion.
Right. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Jared.
And like I said, if there is dirt on the FBI's hands, I want to hear all about it. But this doesn't cut it for me.
Right. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Jared, but there was someone else who, and I believe the Majority Report pointed this out, I should say. There's someone else that Fox News really loves that was referenced as an unindicted co-conspirator in a case. And unless I'm wrong, Donald Trump was never an FBI agent, unless we don't know that he was undercover or something.
He has become the swamp.
Well, he doesn't need to be an FBI agent to have made that true. But let's continue with this clip.
This dangerous insurrectionist was led to believe there would be a, quote, quick reaction force also participating on January 6th. That quick reaction force, Caldwell was told, would be led by someone called Person 3, who had a hotel room and an accomplice with him. But wait, here's the interesting thing. Person 2 and Person 3 were organizers of the riot. The government knows who they are, but the government has not charged them. Why is that?
Okay, all right, so he's now harping on the idea that Person 2 and Person 3, who are mentioned in this indictment, who are the unindicted co-conspirators, are referenced as organizers of the event. I mean, we know the organizers of the event. We know a lot of their names. And we know a lot of them have not been indicted. I mean, fucking Alexander.
What was I saying just earlier? If they haven't filed charges on somebody yet, they usually don't put their name in a charging document, especially not at a federal level. So it seems very likely that what this, like, anonymous name actually represents is that the FBI or the DOJ is actively looking at the potential of filing charges against the organizers of events on January 6th.
Right. And you know who else, by the way, could be considered an unindicted co-conspirator who had a hand in organizing the day's events? That could also be discussing someone like an Alex Jones, who, again, we know has not been charged, has not been indicted, and had a hand in organizing the event. I mean, I could go on probably for hours with all the people who we know that would that label could pertain to. I mean, I'm not speculating who those specific Person 2 and Person 3 are. I'm just saying that any of those can hypothetically be an unindicted co-conspirator. There's only about 30 seconds left of this clip. Let me continue.
You know why. They were almost certainly working for the FBI. So FBI operatives were organizing the attack on the Capitol.
Not almost certainly
on January 6th, according to government documents. And those two are not alone. In all, Revolver News reported that there are, quote, upwards of 20 unindicted co-conspirators in the Oath Keeper indictments, all playing various roles in the conspiracy, who have not been charged for virtually the exact same activities, and in some cases, much, much more severe activities, as those named alongside them in the indictments. Huh? So it turns out that this white supremacist insurrection was, again, by the government's own admission in these documents, organized at least in part by government agents. Are you shocked? We're shocked. We shouldn't be shocked. Because in March, the FBI director admitted...
All right, well, I think it's hilarious that he says that he's shocked, but we shouldn't be shocked because the FBI director He goes on to say the FBI director said something to the effect of the FBI's involvement with tracking these groups. But that's not what would make you not shocked if there was FBI involvement. What would make you not shocked is the fucking entire history of U.S. intelligence. I mean, are you kidding me? The idea, it would not be crazy to find out that the FBI was tracking people and keeping an eye on people and involved in learning about what was going on. Hell, I wouldn't even be shocked if we found out that there was someone in the FBI who was embedded with the Three Percenters, with the Oath Keepers, with the Proud Boys, who did go along and push this stuff forward too, along with the other right-wingers who organized the event. But here's the thing. Nothing Tucker Carlson said is proof of it. It's not even close.
Yeah, it just doesn't hold up. It's like, I mean, yeah, and I don't know that I would go, like, so, like, the agencies are a little different. I don't think the FBI has ever done something like on that level, on the domestic scale, certainly like the CIA has. But so it would definitely like set a precedent if that was true. And if you're going to like make such a humongous claim, you have to have humongous proof.
Right.
And all this really boils down to is just like, I'm too stupid to read three fucking blog posts about like the law.
Right. So Jared, let's move on to this last thing. Just a couple more minutes. You brought up the current outrage over the idea that this country would make a federal holiday to celebrate the end of slavery in the U.S. I mean, I can't think of anything more divisive. Can you, Jared? I mean, the right is absolutely right, of course, that this is something. I mean, this is just insanity. This is insanity.
This is ridiculous, man. This is like so many of our holidays are just utter bullshit. Like for so long, you know, we've been celebrating fucking Columbus Day. Wow. Imperialism at its finest, folks. And then it's like, but this is like actually something worth celebrating. It's like one of the things we fucking got right along the way, which was like, oh, looking up and being like, damn, slavery. Actually, maybe not, folks. And of course, like problems are stemming from that to this day. Like it has ingrained so much dog shit in our country, both societally and also systemically. But like this seems like something everybody should be able to like wrap their heads around, which is like, oh, ending slavery, that's good. We should recognize that and use that as a moment to like reflect on that and remember that that was pretty fucked up and that we shouldn't do it again. But apparently not, you know. It's like all these people just need fucking things to get mad at now, and like half of the GOP in Congress is just trying to be influencers. So even people that enthusiastically supported Juneteenth and would be like, wow, why didn't Obama make Juneteenth a holiday? But now the Republicans are doing it. I guess the Democrats are the real racists, are now like flipped on it and think that it's like it's white genocide to recognize that like ending slavery was good and to give everybody a fucking day off because of it. Because why not?
Right. It's so like this to me is the real, and I saw you retweeted this, so I grabbed these screenshots to share. This, to me, is the real, like, nothing shows just the right-wing mindset as well as these tweets from Charlie Kirk over the past, I think it's just the past, like, 2 years. Here is Charlie Kirk. I'll read each tweet as I put it up on the screen. Here's Charlie Kirk, June 19th, 2020, so that's last year. This is your daily reminder that we wouldn't be celebrating Juneteenth had Republicans not freed the slaves. Now, for those who aren't aware, if you watch this show, you probably are. Charlie Kirk is the founder of Turning Point USA. He is a huge, major right-wing influencer, I guess you can say. He has his own podcast show now, but he gets tons of money from various conservative groups and conservative wealthy conservatives, basically selling them the idea that he is saving the youth by turning young people on to Republicans and conservatives.
Yeah, he's going to red pill your grandkid, right, by posting something like, actually, it was the Republicans that freed the slaves. And then your grandkid is going to be like, that's so epic, Charlie. I love free markets now. And like,
right, right. And now here
it's amazing, dude. It's amazing it fucking worked. I'm in the wrong profession.
Right. I think that all the time. Here's Charlie Kirk that same day last year. Today is Juneteenth, celebrating the end of slavery in the United States. This was made possible thanks to Republican President Abraham Lincoln. Today, Democrats are fighting to tear down his statue. Now, I don't know any Lincoln statue that was ever in danger. Are you aware of any Lincoln statue, Jared? Yeah, I didn't think so. Here's Charlie Kirk. Last year again, the day after Juneteenth, this is June 20th, Senate Republicans are introducing legislation to make Juneteenth a federal holiday. Barack Obama and Joe Biden were in the White House for 8 years. Why didn't they ever do it? Thinking face emoji.
Now, oh, that's his favorite.
Right. Now, here we go. The fourth tweet. Now, you guys, you know what you're going to see. You're obviously going to see a tweet from Charlie Kirk celebrating that finally, a year after he tweeted all that great stuff about how Republicans ended slavery and wanted to make Juneteenth a federal holiday, he clearly is going to be celebrating this momentous occasion where Juneteenth is now actually a federal holiday. Oh, wait. No, I'm sorry. This was posted today. Lincoln knew America's founding was July 4th, 1776. He knew that was the day our amazing nation made a step from ideal to reality. Juneteenth, in quotation marks this time, is an affront to the unity of July 4th. We now have two summer holidays, and one of them based on race. Shame on the GOP for supporting this. Oh, the humanity, Jared. Oh, the pain, the horror, the suffering of Charlie Kirk. Oh my God. I mean, the real part that, I mean, this whole thing is incredible, but I especially love when he has to point out that we now have two holidays in the season of summer. Oh my God, Jared, what would we do with two holidays in one season?
Oh, dude. And it's, I forget who said it. I think it might have been that account, like Garlic Corgi or whatever. You know the one I'm talking about?
Yes.
That pointed out that like that series of tweets was compiled and posted by Justin Amash. And if you get bodied by that dude, like you absolutely, it like that's almost humiliating even beyond like the content of the tweet, just that he's able to like if that's like getting beat up by like a toddler.
Right.
As far as like,
that's
where
I saw it from.
Online clout
right,
goes.
Right. Thank you for source for crediting the proper, yeah, don't want to, especially libertarian, don't want to mess it up with
yeah, you let a libertarian dunk on you, dude. Congratulations.
Right, right. All right, Jared, thank you so much for joining. Oh, there was we don't have time. I'll talk about it in the second half. I wanted to I saw that you were tweeting also about Tim Pool's latest hire.
Oh my God, that could be like a whole other episode. I'll have to come back sometime.
Right, right. I'll talk a little bit about it on the second half, so people who want to know can find out. But we'll definitely have to talk more about it when you come back on. Oh, one last question, Jared. This one might be the hardest one of them all. From a listener in the, where did I see this? From a listener in the chat. This is from Dockers 11. Now here we go, Jared. This is a hard one. Is that a Pomeranian?
It is Pomeranian.
Let me see. Pierre?
He's sleeping.
He's sleeping.
Oh, they must have sent this to me a while ago then.
I'm so, sorry. Pierre has gone to bed. He is sleeping now. So, but yeah, it is Pomeranian. He's 9.8 pounds. Follow him on Instagram at Pierre Turbo. He's it's a great dog.
Jared, you sure you want to leave right now? Because apparently, we just got raided on Twitch, and there are now a bunch of people in the but no, it's all right. If you got to jump, no big deal. I think who do I say? Oh,
yeah, I don't know what that means. Rated?
Rated.
R-A-T.
No, rated. Raid. Or raid.
Oh,
raid. 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 Raid.
Oh, no, no. I know what rating is. I thought you were talking about something else. Do you know where it's coming from?
Oh, yes, I do. Jordan Uhl is in the Twitch chat right now.
Oh, incredible.
Right. I just got a bunch of, hello, everybody. Hello, Twitch viewers. We have much more coming, even though Jared Holt is jumping right now. You could also rewind. I don't know if you could rewind on Twitch. Can you rewind on Twitch? I know you could. I'm simulcasting right now. This is also on YouTube. And so you can rewind on YouTube. If you can't rewind on Twitch, I'm sorry. But this episode will be up in its entirety via YouTube live stream. It'll stay up on YouTube for replaying purposes. And also it'll be up as a podcast in a little bit. But right now, Jared is saying goodbye.
Ta-ta.
Jared Holt, everybody, thank you so much for joining me. Where could everyone find you, Jared, and where could they check out all your wonderful stuff?
Check me out. I'm on Twitter, Jared L. Holt. I've got a podcast called Shitpost. It's pretty good, but every once in a while I have this guy named Matt Bender on, and he's kind of a prick, but we make do. And
when Jared says every once in a while, he means like every once in a while. I haven't been on in a while, buddy. What are you talking about? Are you promoting it as if I'm some sort of regular?
No. We'll get you back soon. We'll get you back soon, Matt. You check out my work at DFR Lab. I do some interesting stuff there from time to time, and my colleagues do some really cool stuff. And very last thing. Next week, the Digital Forensic Research Lab is hosting this totally free thing. It's going to be dope. It's 3 days of like everything extremism, misinformation, digital democracy, not just in the US, but as these issues hit all around the world. It's called 360 OS. If you find me on Twitter, like wherever, there's links to it there. You can sign up for free, tune in whenever you want, tune out whenever you want. But that is going to be super cool, so definitely check that out.
And I want to stress, it's the Atlantic Council, not what I called it earlier in the show. It's not the Atlantic City Council. I still can't get over I did that. But thank you so much for joining me tonight, Jared. Always, always, always a pleasure. And to everybody else watching the show right now, we have much, 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 much more for you. So stick around. Just give me a... Well, first of all, I'm going to do... So first of all, goodbye, Jared. I'm going to hang up on you now. Say bye to Pierre for me, being that he's sleeping. We have much more for you, though. First, I'm going to do some quick promotion of the various ways you support this show. Then we will take a quick one... Not even a minute, just like 30-second break so I could refill my drink so I could not be parched for the rest of the show. And then we're going to go into much, much more, including Tim Pool's latest hire for his show. We will also talk about, what else do I got for you? Let me see what else I pulled for you. Oh, we also got Project Veritas's latest big expose that... They said they were going to blow the lid off of Fox News. And let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, they did not. We will talk about that. Fun clips to play. First, though, I would like to say you can support this show by becoming a supporter on Patreon at patreon.com/Matt Binder. When you support this show by becoming a patron subscriber, you help keep the show growing and going. And people who make the show possible, I will name some of them right now. First off, I cannot forget to name the people who just joined the Patreon since the last episode last week. And that would be Explorewin. Thank you so much for becoming a patron. Victor B, thank you so much for becoming a patron. And Indira S, thank you so, so much for becoming a patron. And of course, there are other wonderful patrons, like the longtime patron subscribers like Champagne Communist, Daniel S, Dragon Slayer 19, Christine H, Max W, Benji A, Mr. Danks, Jack C, Katie S, Namde Net, Odeth, Abigail T, Greg D, Dank Uger, JLS, Finn, Why That Thai Guy. Thank you all so much for being patrons. That's just a few of them. That's just a few of them. I cannot even name you all the patrons anymore. But if you can afford to do so, always stress that. If you financially cannot, or you're not sure even financially, please do not. I get it. But if you can, patreon.com/MattBinder. And if you cannot support this show financially, you can support this show for free by subscribing at youtube.com/MattBinder. You can also follow me on Twitch at twitch.tv/MattBinder. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, wherever you listen to wherever you are on social media, I should say. Usually it's at MattBinder, but you can just search MattBinder and find me on there. Go to ratethispodcast.com/doomed. And when you go there, there'll be a list of places where the podcast is in, like the directories like Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, etc. And you can easily get to the different places you could leave podcast reviews. Podcast reviews are extremely helpful to this show. Where's my phone? I'm going to read a review right now because I always love reading the wonderful reviews I get. Some of them are funny. Some of them are very sincere and meaningful. And I love them all. I love every single one of these reviews because they help me help people find out about the show, to be quite frank. Here is a review from Watermelon with the E as a 3 and the L as a 7, excuse me. Serious issues without the stuffiness, it looks like. It's cut off. This podcast has excellent quality interviews with knowledgeable people explaining pressing and confusing issues, and yet somehow manages to remain kind-hearted and funny. Thanks, MattBinder. I love that. Thank you. I'll read one more. Grapiste 111. Or Grapist? I don't know. Whatever it is. There you go. Unique, they say. Matt covers the dangerous right-wing crazies that nobody else does. And, you know, good reviews help people find this show. How else can support this show? How else? If you're in the super chat right now on YouTube, you could drop a super chat. I will read all the super chats. It's like a one-off donation that basically promotes your comment in the YouTube chat. And I will also, what else will I do? Jay Kreets said, did Matt just swear twice? When did I swear? I don't even know anymore. What else? That's it. I guess we'll go to the second half. Oh, I'll open up the phone line so you could call in if you want to talk cryptocurrency, and join. I was hoping someone would do that because I got into, like I said earlier in the show, but for you Twitch people who just jumped in, I got into a huge fight over cryptocurrency with a bunch of crypto advocates over the weekend, and a lot of them said they were going to, well, a lot of them, meaning like three or four, said they wanted to call into the show and talk with me about cryptocurrency and explains me why it's obviously going to be the money of the future and fiat currency is dead and, you know, Bitcoin, baby. I hope someone like that calls in, but anyone is welcome to call in. Just open up Skype, download Skype, it's free, and then search the username Doomed Live and I will take your calls. We'll have a lot of fun. So give me 1 second here. Oh, one more thing. And this is not to put anyone on the spot here because this is, I want to know actually what I can do better. Usually when we lose a patron, it's a fan of the show who says that their financial situation changed. Because when you leave the Patreon, you can say why you left. And literally 99.999% of the time, it's my financial situation changes. And I totally, they don't have to explain anything to me. Whatever you got to do, I get it. But today I lost a patron who says, Matt Binder wasn't as active as I expected, and I truly want to fix that. If you are a patron and you would like to see different things going on in the show, let me know because I have no clue what I'm – I would love to do more. I'd love to do whatever makes you feel like – well, I don't want to do whatever makes you feel like you get your money's worth because this isn't OnlyFans. But I would like to do whatever – would make you feel like you got your money's worth within reason. So definitely let me know via patron message or a comment on the patron post or at me on Twitter or DM me on Twitter or email me, or you know how to get in touch with me. It's all on, you know, you go to doomedcast.com where you can listen to the podcast. You can at me on at Matt Binder on Twitter. Just, you know the drill. Reach out to me. Let me know what I can do to make this show better for you. If, you know, you're thinking of leaving, or, and it's not a financial issue, or you're almost going to become a patron, but there's something keeping you from becoming a patron. I want to make everybody feel like they're getting their money's worth. And if I can make this experience more fun and better for you, I want to do that. So with that being said, give me 30 seconds to fill up my drink, and I will be back shortly. For people who aren't watching live on Twitch or YouTube, and for people who aren't patrons, basically just the podcast listeners who aren't paid subscribers, this is where I say goodbye to you and say, see you next time on Doomed.